Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we are on location in Highland, Indiana, at Humane Indiana, with Rachel Delaney. All right, good morning, Rachel, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, thank you.
To start, I always like to ask my guests, just tell me a little bit about you.
Okay. So I was born in Hammond to two teenage parents. And so my parents were teenagers and very, very young. Grew up in Calumet City and, you know, just had a childhood where we moved around a lot and my parents were divorced when I was young and lived in Calumet City pretty much my whole life. Went to grade school, elementary school, and high school there. And then I went out on my own when I was a senior in high school. Got my first apartment on my own. So there's so much to tell. I'll just give you the highlights, but, very much, kind of from there, just went to the path that I'm on now somehow.
Okay. Okay. So right now, what is the position you hold here at Humane Indiana? How long have you been here? Tell us how you got involved in it to begin with.
Okay, so I am the Chief Executive Officer for Humane Indiana, and I have been here now about 12 years. Initially, I started volunteering at the organization, and I was on a whole different path at the time. I had moved from Illinois to Indiana, and I was working 12-hour shifts at the time. So I had a lot of free time and spent a lot of it at the shelter. And so I was like, I love this. I've always very much been an animal person. And we had every animal you could imagine, including a duck when I was growing up.
In Cal City?
Yes. I know. We probably weren't supposed to have it, for sure. So I remember calling my dad because I felt like this was my path and I wanted to work at the Humane Society. At the time, I was working as a paramedic and I was in nursing school. So it was very much a different path. But prior to that, I worked in Chicago for LaSalle National Bank in the marketing department. And for my age, it was a really great job. And I remember calling my dad and saying, but I want to make a difference in the world. And I just don't feel like being behind a desk. And he was like, no, 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 don't do that. And I said, well, it's too late. I already did. So I went to become a paramedic. I went to, I was in at Purdue. And then I started volunteering. So I spent every minute that I could at the shelter.
And this is while you were in nursing school?
Yes. Okay. I was working as a paramedic at the urgent care and then also in college at the time as well. And so I spent all my free time at the shelter. And the director said, do you want a job here? You know, we're posting for a volunteer coordinator position. I think you would be great. It could be a shared position. And I was like, well, I'm here anyway. You know, I may as well. So I did off-site adoption events on the weekends.
Okay.
And I would take the animals to Petco and PetSmart and get them adopted. And I loved it so much. So she said, you're doing such a great job. I want to hire a new position as customer service manager. Would you consider coming over full time? I was like, no, there's no way I can't, you know. I have insurance and, you know, I would be making more money at my other job. And I just don't know if I can make it work. So I did. I made it work. And I learned everything that I could. So I spent all of the time that I could just researching about animal sheltering and animal welfare and legislative issues and all of those things, and took the position as customer service manager. My office was in a closet at the shelter. And I said, I just want to learn everything that you do. And I remember thinking, you know, someday I really would love it if I was the executive director. And so everyone was like, whatever, keep dreaming, you know. And I spent as much time as I could with the director and learning as much as I could. And being there and doing anything that I could to help. And so she said, I'm going to be transitioning out of my position in about a year, you know, if you want to continue to learn more. And I always have been a person that, you know, I'll learn it. So I'll try it, I'll learn it. Right. And I feel like anything that you put your mind to, it really can be accomplished. So I very rarely think things are impossible. And so like 3 months later, she said, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to recommend that you put in for the director position. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. What are you talking about? You know, and it just sort of happened. And it was by surprise. But I felt like it was an opportunity that I absolutely couldn't turn down. And so I wrote a letter to the board and, you know, graciously somehow, some way they said, okay, you know, we will put you in as interim director. And from there, I moved to executive director. And still to this day, you know, I'm so thankful that they gave me that chance. But I remember thinking, like, the first day, what the heck am I doing? I had no idea. I was like, wait a minute, how much money are we in debt? You know, and I think it was like, at the time, there was a deficit of like $150,000. I'm like, what did I do?
So you walked into a hole.
I walked into a hole. Of course, you know, doing really fantastic, great things. And this was the first shelter in Northwest Indiana to become a no-kill facility. But there's a huge cost that comes along with that. And the shelter wasn't set up, you know, to be able to handle that, just in terms of isolation areas and things like that. And very much we're so fortunate for everything that we have, but it was definitely a, there was a minute that I was like, whoa, what is going on? And so from there, we've continued to grow. And now there is a spay neuter clinic, the Estelle Marcus Animal Clinic, resale shop, and a wildlife center.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So the 12 years that you said you've been, is that all the way from volunteering or is that in the CEO position?
So I believe it was November of 15-ish that I started with the actual position. And by like early 2016, I think I was in the interim gotcha. Director position. So gotcha. It's been a 12 years total, but I was volunteering a little bit prior to that.
So. Gotcha. Very cool. So we're going to jump into the business side of things.
Sure.
Right now, you guys just went through a rebranding. So mm-hmm. why don't we talk a little bit about that? What was the impetus for that?
Sure.
And is that part of the growth plan, which I assume it is?
Yes. So, initially, I think we were sitting at a budget of roughly $350,000, when I first started this position. And, you know, we are going to very quickly here be sitting at $3
million. Wow.
It's an annual budget.
Since 15?
Not since 15, well, since for the last 12 years.
Okay.
So,
gotcha.
So, it's been a steady growth phase for sure.
Yes.
You know, a part of this was very much prompted from my relationship with Estelle Marcus. And her picture is in my office there. And she very much was a mentor for me and just was so passionate about animal welfare and was a visionary. And her husband donated the land that the shelter sits on today.
Okay.
So we started as Hammond Humane Society, and Estelle and Bernard purchased the land in Munster, and we moved to Munster in 2000. So from there, she was always, you know, involved with the board and things like that. But prior to me coming on as director, she really wasn't so involved anymore at the time. And I remember meeting her at a function, and I was like, "You're the Estelle Marcus?" Because in the hallway at the shelter, there is a plaque, a giant plaque that says the Estelle Marcus shelter. And so I was like, "I'm so happy to meet you. You know, this is so great. Let me tell you what's going on." And she very much, her dream was to build a spay neuter clinic.
Oh. So it was in her vision originally.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was her vision. And she was insistent that it had to be at the same location as the shelter. And I remember saying, but, you know, there are, everyone says, don't do that, don't do that. And I'm so happy that we did, you know. And she was a woman that knew what she wanted and had a plan and just wanted to move forward. And so she always called the spay neuter clinic her last tango in Paris. And she was able to see through the completion of the clinic and the opening of the clinic. And I'm so happy and grateful
cool.
and thankful for her.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the Humane Indiana part of it.
Yes.
That's just recent.
It is.
Okay.
Yes, and that's a bold statement, right? Humane Indiana. And so we were Hammond Humane Society at one point for roughly, give or take, 40-ish years.
Oh.
And from there, I moved to Humane Society Calumet area. And fast forward to another 40-ish years. And now Humane Indiana. So our scope has definitely grown. We, in 2015, added on the Moraine Ridge Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Valparaiso. And so we were quickly faced with, okay, we are outgrowing the Calumet area portion and spanning out to more communities just outside of Lake County. And so, you know, branching into Porter County. And last year we took in native wildlife from 16 counties in Indiana.
Wow.
Yeah. So also the wildlife, you know, segment is just exploding. And Moraine Ridge was started by a couple, Judith and Jean, and they lived on the land for 50 years. And also graciously have entrusted us with forward movement there. So we were given right of first refusal on the land adjacent to the Wildlife Center, which was the home that they lived in, and 28 acres of land as well. So the on the wildlife side, we took in the equivalent number of native species as we did domestic.
Holy cow.
Yes. So it's just exploding. And there's so much work to be done across the state with, you know, even legislative issues, because Indiana has a little bit of a, well, a little bit of a long way, I guess, if that makes sense. But we are decades behind other states in terms of animal welfare. And legislation. So,
and has that just been a slow to react type thing, or has there been resistance to change?
I think there's a little bit of resistance to change. just because, you know, we're in the Midwest, very much an agricultural industry within the Midwest. And so I feel like on the East Coast and the West Coast, you know, things change a little more quickly. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's there are a couple of factors. And so one example for us is, you know, our menu policy, which has been a little bit controversial. And I think people are starting to get on board a little more with when we explain it and understanding. We don't serve meat at our events. Okay. So our events are vegetarian events. And so, you know, initially there was a lot of resistance to that because people were like, you're trying to tell me what to eat. And what do you mean? Just because I eat meat doesn't mean I don't love animals. And that is absolutely 100% not what we're trying to say. But we do feel within, you know, our values and our mission, and now being inclusive of wildlife and domestic animals, that we can't just say, okay, well, farm animals, meh, you know, who cares? So, and not saying who cares, because I know I'll get, you know, backlash for that. But we felt that it was really important within the organization to withhold those same values and not judgment of what if people eat meat or don't eat meat or whatever the choice is, but as the organization that we stand by our mission.
Right. So. Right. And you've actually had backlash for that?
Yes. Can you believe it?
Seems kind of silly.
I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, more and more people are embracing it. And once we explain why and that we're not saying,
right,
you know, you're right, bad if you eat meat or don't eat meat, then there's an understanding. And it is a creative menu. You know, it really is, yeah, it's a different venue. Right. So it's good.
And being open to different things is never a bad thing.
Right, right, yeah.
So I just want to go back to the wildlife thing. You said animals from 16 different counties in the state. So just kind of go over the procedure of how that goes down. Do they call into the central office up here and then you guys send someone to rescue?
So it's interesting. And just as a side note, this year we've taken in 156 different species, which is amazing. And so there have been animals coming into the center that, you know, we're just amazed. We had a couple of bald eagles that came in, and red-tailed hawks, screech owls. So we do have ambassador animals, and the ambassador animals are animals that are not able to be released that we use for educational programs.
Okay.
And so we visit the schools. We also have on-site homeschool programs at the center, and field trips, things like that. And so typically what happens is if someone needs assistance, then they can call into the Wildlife Center, and our team there will try to help them with whatever it is over the phone. A lot of times the animal hasn't been abandoned if it's a baby, and there are things you can do that the mom, you know, will end up coming back. But if it's an injury or something like that, then we encourage people to call ahead of time, or they can bring the animal into us. Once in a while, if we're able to, we'll go out and, you know, assist if we can too.
Yeah.
So 156 species, like.
I know. We had two pelicans. It's amazing. It is so amazing.
And where did they come from? I mean,
well, you know, this, so the lakeshore and where we are, there is a migration pattern.
Gotcha.
And so some birds end up here that you wouldn't think.
Right.
And so it's interesting. It's been really interesting, and it's just really magical there. So
yeah, that's
a great
that's
place.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you said that's just been since 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the end of 2015. So roughly 3 years. Our wildlife rehabilitator there came from Florida. She moved here from Florida. And our team there is pretty small, but we're continuing to grow, and it's really great.
So it's small compared to the domestic side, but you said it's taking the same amount of animals in?
Yes, I know. So it's different, and this was something that I really had to grasp, because on the domestic side, it always is, okay, we need, the solution is spay neuter. So even if you have, it doesn't matter how much space you have, you'll still, you know, end up filling the space. And so the focus is on capacity and, you know, spaying and neutering and those efforts. But all of the caging, for the most part, is the same. On the wildlife side, all of the caging is different. So,
Depending on what the animal is. Gotcha.
So I'm like, we need another cage? What is going on? And it's because there are so many different species that come in. So we're continually building enclosures there and branching out on that side.
So I'm assuming the cost to do business is higher there then on that side because of that?
No, it's actually lower.
Okay.
It's interesting because, so here are the challenges between the two. So the cost of business is lower on that side. However, it's more difficult to raise donations because for the most part, people can't go through because of the impact on the rehabilitation process. So that's the challenge because it's different from the shelter with people going through the areas.
Because people want to see and touch what they're giving money to.
Right.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So let's go to the domestic side. You said the current location has been there since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Same size facility, or is it?
So we added on the clinic and at that time expanded the intake center.
Okay. So the clinic is on site there?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's the same building.
Okay.
All of our animals at the shelter get spayed and neutered at the clinic prior to adoption. And this is really exciting because we just unveiled a new adoption vehicle. So the vehicle goes out to the community. And we can bring about 20 animals out on site to different places. We can go to schools, facilitate adoptions, and visit really on the go wherever we need to. And then we also are opening on October 14th a satellite location within Alsip Nursery in St. John.
Oh, cool.
So, there was a rescue there prior.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they did a great job with converting over to rescue from, selling puppies. And it just wasn't something that, you know, they were able to work through. Not for lack of trying, for sure. But the space was available and it's a great opportunity within South Lake County to find more animals' homes.
So you guys are going to be running that facility?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool. And you said October?
October 14th is the grand opening.
Cool. And then the place that we're at now, the resale shop. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. So every part is just so exciting. I mean, I love it. Every part is, I try to pick a favorite part of the organization, and I can't because it's all so exciting. There's so much going on. So our administrative office space is within the same space as the resale shop. And the resale shop, at this point, has exceeded $1 million.
Wow.
And everything that comes in is donated. We're open 7 days a week now. And It is just amazing. So we're starting to expand on eBay and Amazon with the sale of different items. But everything here is donated. We very much love the recycling aspect. We partner with other local shops. So if we're out of space, we'll take the donations there or with Restore, you know, anything that is donated that is building materials or those types of things, then we'll bring there as well. So yeah, really supported within the community and a great give back to be able to help the animals.
Yeah, when I got here a little early and there was probably four cars of people waiting for you guys to open the door.
Right. Yeah. Because cool. They're such great stuff. Yeah. It's really great. It's amazing.
So how long has the resale shop been tied into the whole thing?
So the resale shop, I have to get my timelines. Let's see. The resale shop, we were on Jewett in downtown Highland, and we outgrew the space, and there wasn't really much parking. So we have been here, I want to say, since 2014.
Okay.
And the Jewett location since 2003.
Okay. Cool. So $1 million in revenue, and you said you were around $3 million in revenue. So a third of your revenue actually comes from?
Well, I wish it was annual revenue of $1 million, but it isn't.
Okay.
However, that would be great. That would be fantastic. Overall, for the years that it has been open.
Gotcha.
But who knows? I mean,
yeah,
that's totally possible, right?
Anything is, right?
Yes.
You said it earlier.
I know. I 100% believe that.
Very cool. So you said at the beginning it was you started volunteering for the passion of animals.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same passion for animals that it drives you now, or is it something different that drives you still?
That is a great question. Because it is different. So I think that, and this is just sort of my bigger picture version of things.
Sure.
But for me personally, I very much feel like it is our, I guess our mission while we're here, to make a difference. And so I truly feel like we're all here to serve a purpose, make a difference. And initially, when I started down this path, of course, you know, I say this really reluctantly because I hate to even reflect back on this, but there are so many people in animal welfare that are like, oh, I'm in animal welfare because I don't like people. I hate people. I love animals, right? And oh no, that's so bad. One of the things that is really, really important to me as the leader of this organization, but also I think just in general that we need to embrace as human beings is that we need to have compassion for all living things, right? So if you're able to have compassion for animals, for most people that's so easy, right? Because animals don't talk back. They don't really they give unconditional love. They're always happy to see you. And so that's like fantastic, you know? And so we could say, well, if humans were that way, life would be perfect. But that isn't the case.
No.
So when we get to the point of really understanding and having compassion on the people side of things, that's where real change starts. So I personally like to think that within animal welfare, that is sort of the beginning point of changing the people and human component. One of the programs that we have right now is called Pets for Life. And Pets for Life is a program within Gary and was started nationally by Humane Society of the United States. We were chosen as one of the mentorship groups. Right now, I think across the U.S., there's maybe 30 to 50 groups that are doing this program. And it's literally going door to door in 46407 within Gary and, you know, knocking on the door and saying, hey, do you have any pets? And so it's very much a new way of thinking within animal welfare, because within the sheltering community, we tend to be very judgmental and saying, well, you're not good enough to have an animal, or you need to have X, Y, and Z for you to have a pet.
You're saying for adoption reasons?
Yes.
Okay.
So, or you need a background check and you need to have this or that, and you can't have kids that are this age if you want this kitten, and all of these crazy things, right? And so...
And is that... Sorry to interrupt. No. Is that self-mandated or is that...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. It is. This is where I personally look back and I think about the pets that I've had within my life and how important animals were to shaping me as a person and how important they were in my childhood. And so, you know, we grew up within the welfare system. All of the clothes we had were hand-me-downs, and my mom bought everything with food stamps. And, you know, we were a part of that system. And I, you know, our dog wasn't spayed and neutered because there was no way that we right. could take the dog to the vet, right?
Right.
So when... When we say, okay, well, you shouldn't have a pet because you can't afford X, Y, and Z, is that fair? So that's one of the things that, you know, we're looking at. How can we, this judgment isn't going to prevent people from having animals, right? So they're going to get an animal somewhere. The animal coming from us is spayed and neutered. It gives us a chance to have open communication of, do you know about things like heartworm preventative? Our clinic is low cost and a resource available for the community. And, you know, I talked earlier about my favorite part of the organization. And I have to say, if I lean to anything, it's the Pets for Life program. Because the community and... everyone that I've met within the Pets for Life program, it is life-changing. I mean, truly. And it's a humbling experience where, you know, we recognize that everybody has the same love for their pet and that their pet is considered a part of the family. And so if you have the choice of, okay, do I have a bed for my child to lay in or a bed for my dog to lay in, right? Does that mean that you shouldn't have, or your children shouldn't have the love, you know, of having an animal in the home? So we provide food. If there's something, you know, we automatically start to judge, right, of if we, within animal welfare, sometimes if we drive up to a house and there's a dog that's tethered and tied out, right? And we're like, oh my gosh, that person is terrible and they're horrible. And how could they do that? And that's awful. But when you start to talk to the person and you realize the reason the dog's outside is because the dog has fleas and they're, you know, they're like, there's no way I can't have fleas. You know, my kids are going to be covered in bites. And all they needed was a tube of flea and tick preventative. That's like five right. bucks, you know. But there isn't a resource. There aren't stores to go. If you go to the local gas station, that's where you're getting dog food that's marked up 100 times, you know. And so it is this whole other epidemic and realm within our community, right? So that's always the point that I get to where I'm like, I'm like, okay, it's this much bigger scale. And then that leads me personally, what drives me is to try to change and make a difference on the, you know, within everything that I can do of being a good person and trying to give everything I possibly can every single day, and make a difference.
That's cool.
Thanks.
That's great.
I feel like I just went on this total rant. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, that's completely fine. I just want, so the program in Gary, what was it called again?
Pets for Life.
Okay, Pets for Life. So you're, it's kind of multiple facets there. Basically, you're starting the education process of what's available to them. But then are you actually bringing dogs for them to adopt at that point too?
So we are taking their animal from their home and transporting to our spay-neuter clinic to get their animal spayed and neutered. It's a free service. Right now it's grant-funded. And, you know, whatever is needed. So our goal at the shelter right now is not to take people's animals. It's to build a relationship with animal control of not giving citations, right, so that animals end up in the shelter system. Our goal is to keep animals within the home and offer what we can to keep animals within the home. So on a national scale, we're seeing spay-neuter work, and that's going to be the future of sheltering. So...
That message has been out for many years.
Yes, it has. But in Northwest Indiana, you would never know, right?
Yeah. Well, and I...
Sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember as a kid, Bob Barker.
Right.
Saying at the end of...
Yes.
So, I mean, the message has been out there, but it's getting it to the people who need to know it.
Yes.
Is the issue.
So the same population of people that we were condemning from being adopters are the same population of pets living in poverty that we need to, that's where we need to address the issue.
Right. Because like you said, everybody wants a pet or most people want a pet, and they're going to figure out a way to get one.
Right.
Whether it's positive or negative, they just want a pet.
Yeah. And, you know, do we want to promote the puppy mill industry? No.
Right.
And you can go anywhere, I mean, anywhere, and get a free kitten on the corner, right? So by not adopting a kitten to a family that wants a kitten, I mean, the kitten that's coming from our facility is spayed and neutered, up to date on shots, you know, and we use that opportunity to become a resource and share information and establish a relationship with that family.
Right. So they basically have a trust point where they can come back when something is wrong.
Right. Yeah. Trust is really, really important, especially within our Pets for Life program, because most of the, I think it's, so we keep very, very close data within the program. And I think it's like 89% of people have never been to the vet. And any communication that they have had related to their pet is usually negative. So, oh, are you here to take my dog? Am I getting a ticket? You don't have my rabies vaccine, things like that.
So just on a trust point, like you're just knocking on random doors in a zip code. So how welcomed is that? Or has it been a process where a friend of a friend of a friend, you were at their house a week ago or whatever, so now they know it's okay to let, to talk to you, basically?
So we have a process called locking the block. So we researched where the most need was, and that we started in 46407. Then we literally had like a ground zero point. And from there, we branch out, and we don't move on to the next block until that block is covered. So word of mouth happens and neighbors start to talk, and then they'll say, oh, hey, you know, she has a dog over there, or he has two cats. And initially I went out at the start of the program because it was important to me that I wasn't asking anybody to do something that I wouldn't do. And the myths and stereotypes are just crazy. And, you know, it is just, it's so great. And everyone in the community has been so welcoming and like, oh, you want to come in and, you know, have lunch, or it's just connecting with, that connection with pets, like that covers all of the, everything else.
Demographics.
Just, absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. And then once they figure out that you're there on a non-confrontational visit, the attitude changes.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And I love, love, love the community because in so many communities these days, neighbors aren't talking. And, you know, it just is always, people are out on the porch and, you know, everyone knows who their neighbors are. And that isn't how it is within some of the other communities.
Very true.
You know, so I love it.
Yeah, that's cool. And you, how long have you been doing that program?
So that program started in, 2014.
And you said that was on a national level, and that's where the grant money is coming from, on the national level for that one?
So we are, we're mentored through Humane Society of the United States. So they started the program and also facilitated the training. We used the database as well. And so it initially was funded through a private donor within the state. And now there is a charitable trust locally that is supporting that as well as HSUS.
Cool. So back to somewhat tying into this, you said that there's restrictions or there, whatever the guidelines are for adoption. But are those in place because everyone likes a cute puppy, a cute kitten? Oh, you know, I want to take him home. And then in 3 months, like, whatever. What did I get myself into? Or so how is that screening process kind of taking both sides of the line where you have to get rid of the people that aren't going to be responsible, but allow the people who are. So how have you found that fine line yet? Or is that still a dance that is ongoing?
So, so some people will say that, I am a bit of an optimist with just thinking that, oh, everyone's good and I can see the good in people, right? All right, I get it. Like, sometimes that's not the case, but it's just because people don't know. I truly believe that. So we have an open adoption process, and this process was adopted through national research. So the ASPCA, Humane Society of the United States, have done research on this open adoption process and to see if the return rate is higher when we have open adoptions than if we don't. Same thing with waived adoption fees, that people will say, oh, well, now there's no value to the animal, right? And I will argue that of, okay, well, it's a life, you know, so there's automatic value, but I get it. I get it. So open adoption is that we're having a conversation with the family so that we can, through that actual conversation and not yes and no answers or, oh, it's scripted, right? Yeah, I'm going to say that I talked to my landlord, but I really didn't, right? And even if I have you call my friend, my landlord still says I can't have cats, but I'm going to have one anyway. Like, so many people do that, right? I probably like 99% of people. So we're like, okay, you know, that person is going to get around it if they really, really want to. Right. There was also, we would do vet checks of, okay, is your animal at home spayed and neutered? Is your animal at home up to date? So the animal that is being adopted from us is spayed and neutered, right? And that is our opportunity to say, okay, you know, here are the benefits of spay neuter. This animal that you're bringing home today is fixed. Here's why. And talk about how we could get their other pets in the home fixed. And so it's more of having a conversation of, is this the right match? So you really are set on, I want this high energy, you know, shepherd. But you're a couch potato, you know, so probably not a good match. Right. We have a behavior team and we do enrichment within the shelter. So aromatherapy, sound therapy, treats. So we encourage everyone going through to drop treats into the cages at the shelter. And so the dogs then see that that's a positive experience and they're quiet and they sit. So they get adopted much more quickly too.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that it's a learned behavior that they pick up relatively quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So, and then our behavior team is also available if there are issues, you know, when the pet goes home, as well. So.
Okay. So how do you guys, or maybe you don't, but how do you guys combat the whole designer dog versus come and get one of our pets that's...
So, you know, I think there are people that are going to be like, I only want this, you know, this kind of dog. And that's just how it's going to be. And so we really encourage that if that's the case, then you just do the research to be sure that it's a responsible breeder and you are seeing the mom and the dads, you know, the background. But any animal adopted from our place, I mean, there is the adoption fee at maximum is $200 and already spayed and neutered, up to date on all their shots, microchip. They have everything. That you know, going out the door, we have vets on staff, three vets on staff. And so they're ready to go, you know? So I think, that matching system, you know, of making sure it's the right, dog is key.
Cool.
Or cat.
Yeah. Or cat. Don't forget the cats.
Right.
So at the, I know the, obviously you started as a volunteer, so there's volunteers at the actual shelter. Are there volunteers at the wildlife as well?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is the percentage of people that are actually on volunteer basis versus paid basis at the facilities?
Wow. So there is no way that we would be able to operate without the volunteers. They are the heart and soul of the organization. And if we look across the organization at the Wildlife Center, over the summer, a majority of our staff is intern, are interns or volunteer based. And our volunteers there are taking home baby squirrels at night and feeding them every, you know, 3 hours. And so our wildlife team is very small. We have four total employees. The PAWS resale shop team, same thing, four team members as well. And at the shelter, that's where our biggest number of staff and also volunteers are as well. But volunteers... at this point, I would say we have probably 300 to 400 active.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's lots going on, and we always, always need them. So, yeah.
So what was the staff at the actual shelter?
So right now, I want to say 20.
Okay. So the 300 people, obviously, some of them work an hour a week or an mm-hmm. hour a month or whatever. So if someone did want to get involved, what's the process for that?
So we always need volunteers. We always need fosters. And there are so many things to do. So if you're like, I can't go to the shelter, you know, I can't see the animals because I'll take them all home, then there's something else for you to do. At the resale shop or, you know, off-sites, or there's so much. And so they would contact us and get together with Ari. She's our volunteer coordinator, and we would find the right match based on interest and time.
Right. Cool. So obviously Humane Indiana is a non-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's probably more challenges as a CEO for a nonprofit than a profit company.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years that you've been CEO, is there anything that you would either have reacted quicker to or done differently looking back to continue the growth path that you guys are on?
So, you know, when I started, I was very, very young. I was still in my 20s when I became executive director. And so everyone was like, she does not know what she's doing. And they probably were right. You know, I mean, I look back now, I'm like, yeek. And so I think that, you know, regardless of if it's for-profit, non-profit, the work that is being done is the same, right? And the commitment within the organization is the same. And I spent a lot of time working on the operations part. And I feel like had I spent less time on the operations end and sort of delegated that and worked more on the relationships end, then that, I think that's probably what I would have changed. But I'm very much a person of self-reflection. And so I am continuously thinking about, okay, what can I do better for the team that's here and within the community?
And I think just touching back on that in my experience, that is a thing to juggle, the operations versus the relationships. But if you don't have the correct operations in place,
right,
the relationships don't really matter.
I know it. Yeah, that's true.
You got to have that foundation, and then the relationships can help you grow the foundation,
right,
and move forward. So, cool. So I see lots of books in your bookcase.
Mm-hmm.
Any book, podcast, seminar recently that gave you a big aha moment that either made you double down on something you're already doing or change things up?
So very much the book that was a just sort of changed my way of thinking was The Art of Happiness. It was written with the Dalai Lama, and that just sort of put things into perspective for me of, okay, these are basic, really basic theories, but just about how we should treat others, you know? And so reading that, I felt, was a turning point for me just in life. But we do something really cool within our monthly meetings right now. And I'm going to give like this shameless plug. I get a mentor box. It's an orange box on my shelf, and it comes every month.
Okay.
And I found out about this through, social media with Ty Lopez. And so, it comes every month. There are two books, and the gist is that he reads like a book a day. And so it's getting through these two books every month. And I bring the books to the leadership meetings, and then someone takes the box every month and reports back to the rest of our leadership team. And the books are great. So last month, there was a book, Scrappy, and our COO had a really great feedback on that book. But it is, you're able to get through the box with just committing 10 minutes a day, you know, if you don't have time to read through the entire books. So it's great.
And I think I'm actually on their email list. I think I saw it somewhere on social. So they give you a synopsis of the book. Is that what it is?
So you get the books,
okay.
And then you also get like this USB sort of plug-in that shows you some short clips, and you get like the highlights and then a workbook to help you work through. So you're more than welcome to borrow them, because I feel like whoever would like to borrow them, they're here, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. And it is. It's so hard to keep up on books.
Yes.
Like, between me talking to people in the community mm-hmm. that recommend stuff, but then me listening to other podcasts
right.
that recommend a million books, it's
yeah.
Even trying to read a book a week, as mm-hmm. some people are suggesting, it's
yeah.
hard.
I know.
It's hard
know
to keep
it.
Up on it.
Yeah.
But the ideas... There's tons of ideas out there.
And absolutely.
Every little bit, every little idea, you know, can move you forward.
Yes.
So outside of business, anything fun that occupies your time?
Well, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I have 4 chihuahuas and a husband. And so it is definitely... interesting to keep everything afloat. And so I try to ground myself with meditation and yoga, and just finding quiet when I can. So it's very rare, but I very much, it's great when I'm like, oh, wait, listen. Oh, nothing. I can't hear anything. That's great. So
yeah, 7 and 4. I'm sure you don't have
it's
too
so
many
fun.
Of those.
I know. It is fun. It is fun. But I'm like, oh my word. So it's busy.
7 to me, I've got a 15 and 10-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And the 7, they're already kind of doing stuff.
Yes.
The 4 still needs you and still fun though.
Yeah. Yes.
For me as a dad, like 2 to 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fun.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, 4-year-olds are like my favorite.
Yeah.
Because they're so entertaining and funny, and you're like, you know, they're just learning everything and asking questions.
Right, absorbing like a sponge.
Yeah.
Very
so
cool.
It's a fun time.
Cool. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to make aware?
There's so much. there is so much. I don't know. The goal here and our new vision that I would love to share is our vision is to inspire compassion within the human spirit as the beacon of the animal welfare community through the relentless pursuit of humane treatment for all.
I like it.
Yeah, thanks.
That's cool. And the new vision and the new logo, the new branding, that's like less than a month old now.
Yeah.
So I wish you good luck on that.
Thank you.
It seems like you're definitely headed in the right direction.
I hope so.
Very good.
I know so.
So to wrap up, why don't you... addresses, phone numbers
sure.
of all the different locations that people
okay.
might want or need.
All right. So the phone number that will be able to get you to any part of the organization is 219-922-3811 or 219-513-8911. And our shelter and clinic are located at 421 45th Street in Munster. Paws Resale Shop and our administrative offices are at 8149 Kennedy Avenue in Highland. And our rehabilitation and education center is in Valparaiso.
Very cool. Website?
Facebook? Website.
Okay.
HumaneIndiana.org.
Okay.
And Facebook, same thing.
Okay.
Our new tagline is "Hi" for Humane Indiana.
Oh, so cool!
Say hi to everyone. So good things, really great stuff.
Very good. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very, very much.